Back in your Bibles to 2 Peter chapter 3, and we'll be focusing on verses 11 to 13, and that's page 1838 if you've got one of the church Bibles. And as we come back to those words, I have a fun fact for you this morning. Do you like fun facts? Yes? And this, even better, is a fun festive fact. Do you like fun festive facts? That's good to say, isn't it? Fun festive fact. Here's your fun festive fact for this morning. This time next week will be Boxing Day. Now, whether you find that a fun fact or not may depend on your feelings about Christmas and how prepared you feel for Christmas as well. Some of you are now thinking, it's come around quickly, hasn't it? It's already just a week until Boxing Day. And some of you may not find it a fun festive fact, but more of a stressful festive fact, because you're aware of all of the things that need to get done between now and Christmas Day. Maybe you've got Christmas cards you still need to write before the last, I see a few nods, before the last Royal Mail. I think Tuesday is the final deadline for first class posts. That's a helpful piece of information you might want to make a note of. And maybe you've got Christmas shopping to do and other things to organise. Maybe some of you aren't quite sure where exactly you're going to be spending Christmas at the moment and need to work out that as well. And as we think about Christmas plans at the moment, I've been reflecting a bit this last week about how our anticipation for Christmas Day dominates so much in our society in December. Now we have December the 25th. On the calendar, Christmas Day. And so much of what happens in the previous weeks is dominated by that thought of December 25th is coming, Christmas is coming. The fact that that's on the calendar, it affects what shops sell and what we buy. It affects the decisions we make and the plans we make, the things we talk about, the things we think about, the way we decorate our houses, the kinds of trees we have in the church building. It affects the music we listen to. It affects so much, doesn't it? Everything dominated by this date that's coming up in the calendar, the 25th of December, Christmas Day. Now, not all of that is bad. I'm not going to tell you this morning you need to go home and tear down all of your Christmas decorations and boycott Mariah Carey for another year. But in our Advent series, we've been thinking about another day that's coming. A more significant day than December the 25th, a day that's on God's heavenly calendar. We don't know exactly what the date is, but there is a day. An even more significant day that should have an even bigger impact on our lives and our thoughts and our decision making now. A significant day that should impact our lives now, even more so than the 25th of December, Christmas Day. And in our Advent series, we've begun exploring what that day is and what that means for us now. And we've only been able to begin exploring it in the few weeks that we've had. And I'm hoping that what we've looked at will encourage you to keep thinking about this day that's coming and what it means for us now as we head into Christmas. And as we've been going through the series, we've had two questions that I've asked you to keep in your minds. One is, what are we waiting for? And the other is, how should we wait? And I want to revisit those questions one last time today as we look ahead to our festive celebrations in less than a week's time. The first question, what are we waiting for? What is it that we are waiting for as Christians this morning? What we're waiting for? We're waiting for Jesus to make all things new. That's what we're waiting for. We're waiting for Jesus to make all things new. When we look at the description of the day of God or the day of the Lord that is coming very soon here in 2 Peter, some of it may not sound very encouraging. Some of it may not sound like the sort of thing we would want to look forward to. Last time we looked at 2 Peter 3, we read verse 10, the day of the Lord will come like a thief. Then the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the heavenly bodies will be burned up and dissolved. And today, verse 12, we're waiting for the day of God, because of which the heavens will be set on fire and dissolved, and the heavenly bodies will melt as they burn. Lots of burning and dissolving. Is that something to look forward to? Doesn't sound like much of a prospect, does it? Lots of burning and dissolving. But then as we keep reading, we see that the fire that burns is clearing the way for something new and something better. It's a bit like the bulldozers that prepare the ground before some great new building project. So the fire that sweeps through is preparing the way for something new and something better. Something described in verse 13 in these words: according to his promise, we are waiting for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. That's what we're waiting for if we know Jesus this morning. New heavens and a new earth. And those of you who are Bible readers probably recognize that language. And maybe we think of firstly the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation, and the final chapters that talk about a new heavens and a new earth. Familiar words to many of us. And the words weren't invented by John or Peter. They were invented by God and spoken first through the prophet Isaiah. And you can read those verses in the prophet Isaiah in some of the final chapters, where he talks about new heavens and a new earth. That's the promise that Peter is talking about here. So what we're waiting for? Jesus to bring new heavens and a new earth. Now, there are a few questions that we might have about that image. I'll address two of them. Questions we might have about this idea of a new heavens and a new earth. One is this. We could ask, well, don't Jesus' friends go to heaven when they die? Isn't that our hope? What is this new heavens and this new earth that the Bible is talking about? How does that fit into the picture? A friend of mine has two phrases that he uses which I find helpful in thinking about our hope as Christians. It says that we can think about our hope above and our hope ahead. And I find that helpful in thinking about our hope as Christians. We have a hope above and we have a hope ahead. Our hope above, that as we face the tragedy and the horror and the terror of death, we know that those who die in Christ go to be with him, go to be with Jesus. That as their bodies are laid in the ground, so they go to be with Jesus. That's our hope and our confidence and our comfort in the face of the pain of death. That's our hope above. But there's a hope ahead as well. The day when Jesus will return and all of his friends will be raised with new, glorious resurrection bodies to live in a new, glorious creation, new heavens and a new earth. And just as when Jesus rose from the dead, his body was something that you could touch and a body that could eat fish, so when we are raised with new bodies, they will be bodies that you can touch and that can eat fish and other food as well, to live in a glorious, new, touchable creation. Our hope ahead when Jesus comes back, the new heavens and the new earth. Another question we might have, we could ask, well, is God here admitting some kind of defeat? If he has to burn everything up and start again from scratch, if he has to burn up and dissolve everything, put it in the bin, then start again from scratch. I'm not sure that's exactly what's happening here in these verses. That the fire that comes sweeping through and dissolving things, I'm not sure that it's just a destructive fire. I think we should see it as a cleansing, transforming, renewing fire. And I say that because of things that we're told elsewhere. I think, for example, of Romans chapter 8 and what Paul says there when he says these words: the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. I'll read that again. The creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. That this creation that we're standing in now is a creation that's been damaged by human sin. When humans first rebelled in the Garden of Eden, that had an impact not just on human relationships and our relationships with God, but on this world as well. And this world continues to be damaged by human sin and disobedience. But the day is coming when the creation will be set free. That just as we're set free from sin and death in Jesus, so the creation will be set free from the consequences of our sin and death and corruption. That God's plans for this world are not to throw everything in the bin and start again from scratch. Now he's bringing his plans to a glorious, wonderful climax where the whole creation will be radically renewed in Jesus. A glorious new creation, new heavens and a new earth. Far beyond even the most optimistic demands of Extinction Rebellion and other climate change groups. A glorious, eternal creation. As we think about that hope, I should add that we should still be concerned about climate and environmental issues now while we still live in this world. That this is God's creation. It's a world filled with people made in God's image. And that God's plans for this world are plans for good. And so we should be concerned about doing good as well. But this verse and this picture here in 2 Peter reminds us that our confidence, as we think about this world we live in, our confidence is not ultimately in COP26 pledges. And our hope is not ultimately some improvement in air quality or water quality or whatever else. No, our confidence is in Jesus. And our hope is that he will one day make all things new. The new heavens and the new earth. There's another key word here in the description of what we're waiting for when Jesus comes back. Not just the word new, but another important word, righteousness. That word towards the end of verse 13, that this is a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. Well, if you've got the old NIV, the 1984 NIV, translates it as the home of righteousness. I like that description. The new heavens and the new earth, the home of righteousness. What we're waiting for, the home of righteousness. An eternity, a future, a home where everything is always right, all of the time. Imagine that. A home where everything is right, all of the time. I'm not sure that we can fully imagine it because it's so far from what we experience now, isn't it? But maybe we can have a glimpse of it in our imagination. This home of righteousness where everything is always right all of the time. A home of perfect worship. Perfect love. Perfect peace. Perfect justice. Perfect joy. Forever. Imagine that. And a home completely free from all violence, from all hatred, from all injustice, from all sin, from all death, forever. Imagine that, where everything is right all of the time. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life. These are words spoken through John in the last chapter of the Bible. Bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb through the middle of the street of the city. Also on either side of the river, the tree of life with its 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit each month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. No longer will there be anything accursed, for the throne of God and of the Lamb will be in it, and his servants will worship him. They will see his face and his name will be on their foreheads, and night will be no more. They will need no light of lamp or sun, for the Lord God will be their light, and they will reign forever and ever. A glorious description of that home where everything will be right all of the time. Now, just thinking about that for a moment, it should be fairly obvious that that's not a place that we naturally belong. A place where everything is always right all of the time. Because in the way we live, we don't always do what is right all of the time. We don't have to look far in our lives to realise that's true. That's surely quite an uncontroversial statement. We don't always do what is right all of the time, even according to our own standards, let alone God's perfect standards. Think about how things are just in our world now, that if you've been convicted of certain crimes, you'll find it hard or even impossible to get a visa to visit other countries. But the other country will say, no, we don't want you to come in here. You've been convicted of that crime, we want you to stay out. But when we think about our lives from God's perspective, well, surely we have to admit that there are so many spots and blemishes on our record of how we've lived, that we haven't loved God as we should have done. We haven't loved other people as we should have done. We're guilty of sin and disobedience. Surely we shouldn't expect to be welcomed into this glorious future home, but shut out. This is a place where everything is right all of the time. Surely we don't fit in that place. And we can't try and work a bit harder to make up for what we've done in the past and to try and obtain a visa to get into this new heavens and new earth. That's the bad news. The good news is we don't need to work really hard to try and gain a visa to get into that future home. The good news is that citizenship in that heavenly home comes to us as a gift in Jesus and through Jesus. Heavenly citizenship in the new heavens and the new earth, that home of righteousness, comes to us in Jesus and through Jesus. The one who came down into this world, God the Son, coming down into this unrighteous world filled with so much sin, came down, born, and born to die. And born to die for us. There's some words that I've quoted, I think, every week in this series about what happened when Jesus died on the cross. Where Paul says in his second letter to the Corinthians, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, he who knew no sin was made sin for us, that in him we might become the righteousness of God. That here on the cross you have the Son of God, Jesus, the perfectly holy, innocent, blameless, righteous one, who always did what was right. And then over here we have us, who have not always done what is right, guilty of sin. But there at the cross, our sin and guilt was placed on the shoulders of the Son of God, and he died for us. So we could be covered with his righteousness, covered by his innocence. So we could be righteous in the sight of God, in right relationship with the God who made us, forgiven, cleansed, welcomed. And not just welcomed now, but welcomed into that glorious new heavens and new earth, the home of righteousness, where righteousness dwells. That question I asked earlier, what are we waiting for? If we trust in Jesus today, if we've come to him, admitting our sin and asking for his forgiveness, asking him to make us new, what are we waiting for? We're waiting for something far more exciting than December the 25th. I don't know what you've got planned for Christmas Day. I don't know what kind of dinner you've prepared or what gifts you've got or what decorations you have in your house. But I guarantee, if you know Jesus, you're waiting for something far more exciting than that day. You're waiting for Jesus to return to make all things new forever. That's what we're waiting for Jesus to make all things new forever. Which brings us to the second question. If that's what we're waiting for, how should we wait? We should wait eagerly. Would that be fair? If this is what we're waiting for, this wonderful future where everything is right all the time, isn't that something to wait for eagerly? And what does it look like to wait eagerly? I'll just give you one word from this passage, one word that Peter gives us as we wait eagerly for that new heavens and new earth. And that's the word in verse 11, holiness. Waiting eagerly means holiness. Maybe that's not the word you're expecting me to say, but that's the word that I've said, so we'll go with that. Holiness. Holiness is a word that describes how we are called to live as the Lord's people. That as we're brought into a relationship with the Lord, so we're called to follow his voice and to reflect his character in our lives. In his first letter, Peter quotes a statement in Leviticus where God says to his people, "You shall be holy, for I am holy." And the same words come to us as Christians, those who follow Jesus this morning. "You shall be holy, for I am holy." Following the Lord's voice and reflecting his character in our lives. And if we're looking forward to the home of righteousness, if we're looking forward to the home of righteousness, doesn't it make sense to long to do what's right now while we wait? Doesn't it make sense to pursue holiness eagerly in our lives now? To pursue it imperfectly, because until Jesus returns, we will always fall short. You know, God has plans to change us to be more like the perfect one, Jesus. But those plans won't be complete until the day Jesus comes back. But we can still grow in lives of holiness with the Spirit's help as we wait for that day. You can imagine for a moment that you're having a new kitchen being put in your house. If you are having a new kitchen being put in, I think doing it the week before Christmas is probably a bad idea. But it's your kitchen, so if that's what you want to do, that's fine. So you're having a new kitchen being put in, and you need a new kitchen being put in because your old kitchen was really not good. You couldn't really cook properly, and all the kitchen cupboards would fall apart. And so you needed a new kitchen. And as the workmen come and put your new kitchen in, you're so excited about that prospect of being in your new kitchen and being able to cook lots of food and store things without them falling on your head and being able to welcome people in for meals and lots of stuff. And you go around excitedly telling people how much you're looking forward to being in that new kitchen and what things will be like. And as you talk excitedly about being in your new kitchen, wouldn't it be a bit odd if every evening after the workmen had gone home, you take a hammer into the kitchen and start smashing things randomly? Wouldn't that be a bit odd? Well, I think it's also a bit odd when I say I'm looking forward to a future home of righteousness and then live as if righteousness isn't that important now. Isn't it a bit odd when I say I'm looking forward to that future home of righteousness and then live as if righteousness isn't that important now? And I know there are areas in my life where the Spirit in the last week has been showing me that inconsistency. But as people who know Jesus, we're looking forward to an eternity of perfect love, of perfect harmony in all relationships. A day when all divisions and selfishness and hatred will pass away forever. So as we wait for that day, let's keep pursuing that love now, that love that we will one day see perfectly. Let's keep seeking that love in our relationships with each other and with the world around us. And we're looking forward to an eternity of perfect justice, where every wrong will be made right forever and will live under the perfectly just reign of King Jesus forever, when all injustice and corruption and deceit will pass away forever. If we're waiting for that, well, let's keep pursuing justice now, that justice that we will one day see perfectly. Not just justice for ourselves, but for others, those that society might overlook. And we're looking forward to an eternity of perfect worship. Our hearts filled with perfect praise and rejoicing for what God has done and for who he is. A day when all of the idolatry and godlessness and sin of this world will pass away forever. If we're looking forward to that, then as 2022 begins in just a few weeks, another scary thought, well, let's keep asking God to grow us in our worship of him, together as a church and as individuals too. As we eagerly wait for that home of righteousness, that with God's help we learn to love righteousness now and learn to live that lifestyle of our eternal home in holiness and godliness. Which leaves us with this question. What will our hearts be focusing on this Christmas? What will our hearts be focusing on? There are lots of things that we could focus on, and we've got the things that people around us will be excited in. You've got the presents and the food and the Mariah Carey songs and lots of other things as well. Things that we could be excited in and focused on. And those things are good for us to rejoice in. But the Bible points us to put our emphasis somewhere else. To quote Peter from his first letter, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And what grace is that? Well, the grace that will bring us into that new heavens and new earth, the home of righteousness. Let's ask God to make that anticipation more real for us this Christmas, in lives of holiness and godliness, waiting for that new heavens and new earth, the home of righteousness. Amen. Well, before